I'm looking to see how clean the resume is, to see how easy it is to read, how much time they have, what sort of licenses they have, and how much experience, and see how many jobs they've had in the last 5 years.
Hey everyone, it's Ryan with Cardinal Aviation. Welcome to episode number 43 of the Audio Briefings. Thank you so much for joining us. We are really happy to have you. I am really sorry that it has been 2 weeks since our last episode. I try to get these out at least once a week, maybe a little bit more frequently, but it has been a super busy couple weeks between the day job, the family, a bunch of client flying. We're working on a big consulting project right now for a client, and that's been every waking minute that hasn't been at work working on that, even a couple all-nighters. But that is almost done, and it is time to get an episode out to you. Now, this is going to be a bit of a longer one. We're going to be pushing an hour, and it is going to be a fantastic hour, especially if you are a pilot that is on the job hunt, whether you're looking for a new job because you've been laid off from your last, or you're looking for that first job. We're going to be joined by Cardinal Aviation coach consultant, the co-founder of flightcrew.ca, Owen Stacey, who's also a chief pilot in a corporate flight department. And we're going to talk pilot resumes. We're going to cover a little bit more networking like we did in part one of this a few episodes back. But there's a lot of good stuff in here. And keep in mind, a lot of it is my opinion and his opinion. And really, at the end of the day, my opinion and Owen's opinion really don't matter. What matters is the person that's going to be looking at your resume and the job that you are looking to get. But hopefully we can give you a few tips that are going to help you along that road, that's going to ease the process, and that will hopefully set you up for success. Just before we get into this conversation with Owen, I just wanted to mention a couple things. One, we've been sending out lots of Cardinal Aviation gear, so you can check that out. Cardinalaviation.ca/store. We got hats, t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, notebooks, pens, all that good stuff. But again, Cardinal Aviation isn't really about a podcast. It's not about gear. It is about helping people transform the way they fly through our coaching, through our consulting, through working with aircraft owners and pilots, just to level up, if you will, just get them to that next level of aircraft operation. So if that interests you or you want some more information, visit us, www.cardinalaviation.ca. Follow us on Instagram. We've been having a lot of fun with Instagram at Cardinal Aviation, and let us know how we can help you when it comes to any of your aviation needs. So the last thing I want to do before we get into our conversation with Owen is thank a few listeners. So on the website, we've got the ability for people to become annual subscribers to support the podcast, or they can buy us a coffee. And I really wanted to thank Doug, Ennio, Doan, and Jennifer for the coffees this week. I needed it. There was a few all-nighters in there. It was amazing. And we have a new annual subscriber, and so I am pleased and proud to tell you that this episode has been brought to you by Robin Brown. And thank you very much, Robin, for believing in what we do, for supporting what we do, and for also investing in your own training and proficiency, and for being such a professional every time you approach the airplane. And I say this because Robin is also one of our coaching clients who I've had the absolute pleasure of flying with the last couple of months in his beautiful Cirrus aircraft. And if there's ever a guy that took feedback to heart and just really puts in the effort to improve, to level up his flying, again, to use that term, Robin is it. So thank you so much, Robin, for everything. Really appreciate it. And I've really enjoyed working with you. All right, without any further delay, I'm going to cut straight to my Saturday night conversation with Owen Stacey.
All right. Okay, so I'm going to try that again. Okay, so we're here with part... Nope, that's not it. Fuck, I need to have a drink.
If you want to go get a drink, get it, because I need to pour myself one.
Wait for it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Let's get this podcast going. Now we're ready.
On the right note, as we both crack a beer, I'm here tonight with Owen Stacey for part two of Pilot Networking and Resume. So thanks for coming back, Owen.
Thank you for having me. I just want to say before we go, this Touch and Go Pilsner by the BCGA Brew is unbelievable. And I love the tag, not to be consumed less than 12 hours prior to flight. That is classy.
You know what? And the cool thing with those labels is they peel off really clean. So you can zap something with the label. It turns into a sticker.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. So Owen is a Cardinal Aviation pilot and consultant. He's also a chief pilot at a corporate flight department out here on the West Coast. And a couple episodes back, we talked pilot networking and the importance of networking. And we got a lot of really good feedback from that, which we've read in previous episodes. And we started flightcrew.ca together a couple months ago, and there's been a really good response. We've actually been able to place a few people, which has been amazing. But we're seeing a lot of resumes, which is good. And going through them, it's been interesting.
It has been. That's why we're doing this episode, to help everyone out.
Yeah. So, I mean, as a chief pilot, I'm sure have seen your fair share of resumes. I have not been in the kind of key hiring position, but when I was flying corporately, we did get a lot of resumes through the door. And so, you know, we'd have a look at them, and I've been involved in hiring in other types of jobs. And I don't know, I feel like resume writing is a little bit of an art, and in flipping through the couple hundred that we have so far, there's a few themes, and there's some really, actually the majority of them are really, really good. But without kind of naming names, we wanted to not go through a couple of resumes, but go through a couple themes that we saw, to maybe help some people spruce theirs up a little bit, give them the best chance of success. Cause that's what we want. We want everyone to be successful, to get placed, to get a job. And right now is tough, but it is possible.
Yeah. If there's one thing everyone can do, it's clean the resumes up, make them easy, and make them readable. That's the biggest thing. It's all about content, what to put on your resume and what not to put on your resume.
So when you have a stack of resumes and you're going through it, I mean, realistically, what is the first thing you're looking for?
I'm looking to see how clean the resume is, to see how easy it is to read, how much time they have, what sort of licenses they have, and how much experience, and see how many jobs they've had in the last 5 years. That's a key red flag. If someone's had, 12 jobs in the last 5 years, why?
Unless they're seasonal, I guess, you know.
Yeah. See, seasonal is different. Yeah. So, and the biggest thing is cover letters. We'll get into this, but first it's got to have a nice cover letter. It has to be addressed. Everyone pay attention to the right person, not, "Hey, Mr. Chief Pilot," comma, and then start rattling off, or name someone who doesn't even work for the company or has never worked for the company. So do your due diligence and find the chief pilot and or the operations manager's name, or the hiring person in the office that works in HR. Someone, you gotta put in a little bit of effort.
And you said Mr. Chief Pilot. So that's a specific example that we saw in the submissions that we have, is one cover letter started with "Dear Mr. Chief Pilot." And I saw that, and that was, I don't know. I saw that, and it was the first thing I saw was "Dear Mr. Chief Pilot." And I mean, it's 2020 in a world where we're trying to find some sort of balance between men and women in the workforce, and where we've got more women assuming management roles and key positions at airlines, at in-flight departments. I feel like if I was not a Mr. Chief Pilot and I picked up that resume, the minute I saw it, I'd be gone. And if you're a Mr. Chief Pilot, I'd look at that and be like, "Oh, that's a little bit narrow-minded, short-sighted. Maybe that's something you might want to change." I mean, I think a "to whom it may concern" might even be better than that.
Yeah. Here's the thing with aviation, and I even looked into it, and I'm sure you did when we first started out. There's no actual template for a pilot resume for everyone to do. So everyone's sort of trudging through the pages and asking everyone, "Hey, can I see your resume to see what you're doing?" I can assure you that out of 300 resumes, not one of them are going to be the same, which is unfortunate. That's why to make these resumes clean and easy to read is very important.
The cover letter is important. And I mean, don't need the whole life story, but it's really, a first impression on how you're put together, how you compose yourself, how you write a sentence. I mean, all these things are so basic, and it doesn't have to be a 2000 word essay. Some of the best cover letters are just straight to the point. Here's a couple paragraphs on who I am, why I'm good for your specific operation and something specific about that operation. I don't think it really suffices to write a stock cover letter and just change the to name and the address on the top. Like every cover letter I've ever looked at that was any good specifically referenced the company multiple times and details about that company, things that that company does specifically, things about that company's values and mission that speaks to the applicant as if they actually give a shit about the company rather than just trying to fill a
seat. Exactly. Put some time in and find some stuff out about the company, not just because it's a seat to sit in and fly a plane that you've wanted to tick a box off and go fly, but you want to find out what sort of people are working there, what sort of business they're doing, what's the background of that business. I'll give you an example. Whenever I fly clients, I always do background checks. I want to know who the client is. I want to know what they're doing. I want to know what their interests are. So guess what? When I have a conversation with them, then we have something in common, or I can do some background. It's no different than when you're going to apply for a job. Exact same thing. You want to, it takes all of 20 minutes. There's so much information now on the internet to find something out about a company, and maybe something piques your curiosity. Maybe the fellow who owns the company owns a development company and you're a realtor and you're like, hey, I could bring some realty experience to the business when I'm not flying for you. So it's little, you know what I mean? So it's little things that you bring to the people that you're applying for that you have something in common or that may perk their curiosity to at least get your foot in the door to get.
It's so easy now too with the internet to go on a website, and every company has a mission statement or values, and it is very easy to find them. And you know what, even if you don't really care, pretend you do, like just try, I guess is the big thing. And I love that you do background checks on your clients and to make sure that you know something about them. It's huge. I remember when I was on the job hunt at the beginning, and I mean, this was pre-iPhone and all this stuff, but I had like a notebook, and everywhere I went, I kept a track of, I applied to this company on this date. And if I happened to meet somebody, write down their name. And if like they said something, just something personal, just make a note like, oh, they said that they had to take their son to soccer practice. And then, so, you know, next time maybe you're going in to see them, it could be 6 months, 8 months later, you just reference that note and you go, oh, hey, how's your son doing at soccer? And if they go, wow, this guy remembers, you know, 6 months ago, my son plays soccer. It's little things like that, they're going to make a difference.
Exactly. It's huge. I'm going to give you one quick example. This is a little bit off track of resumes, but this is an example of networking. I just got back 2 days ago from Honda Jet School. Was there for an initial, was there with a first officer, and was teaching her networking. And she actually has a communications degree. So we started networking with some guys from Hawaii. Well, we got their business cards. We know where they live. We went out and had drinks with them for one night. And guess what? We've both been invited to Hawaii for extended periods of time to stay in their vacation homes for free. But on top of that, she also met with a few other people in the ground school to go do some contract work and sit as a safety pilot for these single pilot guys. Mm-hmm. She doesn't need to have her FAA license. She's just sitting in the right seat just to be a safety pilot. And guess what? She's building a relationship. So take that in regards to applying for other jobs and trying to find work, build relationships with people. And when you do that and you put a good cover letter together and you find stuff out about people, it makes a huge difference.
Awesome. And if you are going to kind of use a form cover letter and change a few things in it to customize to the company, make sure that you remove the name of the other company that you also applied for that day, because you can address it to the one you're applying for. And then you reference their competition halfway down the page about how wonderful they are and how their values really sit with you and how there's nowhere else you'd rather work. And you've addressed the letter to one, and then you've mentioned their competition somewhere else. I've seen that before as well.
We've seen a few of those. And the other one is this, folks, spell check. Half the spell check. We saw so many things that were misspelled. Even companies that people worked for were misspelled. And little things like that, unfortunately, stick out. And you got to make sure that it's, get one of your friends to proofread it. Get someone who works, you know, that is good with resumes, or just get someone to look at, or use spell check. There's no excuse for misspelling things.
Yeah, I'm pretty bad for that. So I'm going to reserve comment. if you know me, my spelling's not my jam. I stick to airplanes. So I want to talk to you about something about rounding hours a little bit, because I know that when we're in the flight training environment and we're, you know, trying to earn our commercial and trying to get this rating or that rating, every 0.1 of an hour counts. Yeah. But we saw a lot of resumes that had like every hour of multi, every hour of PIC, of cross country, whatever it is, down to the like 0.3, down to the 0.4. I mean, and to be honest, it's more common in the low time pilots, because they're trying to count for everything and they don't want to be caught out like I'm lying. So what do you think is acceptable for rounding of hours, just to avoid having decimals in there? Because I just feel like decimals look hokey. And just to be clear, we saw decimals in pilots that had thousands of hours as well. So what's your take on that?
Correct. If it's 647 hours, 0.2, make it 650. If it's 641.3, make it 640. Just round down. Use the five as the deciding factor. 4 or 5 hours is not going to change a chief pilot or a hiring person's mind on whether you're going to fly or not, but they're not interested in the points. Just to make it easy numbers for people to see, because I'll tell you right now, when you see the points and they're all over the page, it makes it very difficult to read. But when someone's looking for a specific time, like multi-PIC time or total time, or we don't care about night flying, we don't care about cross country, take all that stuff off your resume, guys. It counted when you're doing your private commercial. It does not count after you get your license and it's got your commercial. Just put the important meat and potatoes time on your resume that everyone's looking for.
Do you think it's fair comment if you're let's say in the multiple thousands of hours range, let's say north of, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000, to start rounding to the nearest 100?
Yes. Yeah.
Because I feel like it looks kind of hokey if you're like 8,642 hours, like, you know what, call it 8,700, whatever.
Yeah. Round up or down, but be realistic. If a company needs a minimum 1,000 hours because of an insurance requirement and you only have 940, don't say you have 1,000, because a lot of the insurance companies are going to want to see your logbook. If you got 985, then say you have 1,000, because if you have to go get 15 hours on a 172, you'll go get 15 hours on a 172. So be realistic, but don't lie. But at least make it so if it's attainable, like for the example I just gave, then that's completely cool. If I was a chief pilot and said, hey, you need 15 hours, they'd be like, go fly quick, get her done. We're interested in you. And, you know, we don't want people wasting their time and spending money that's not going to, you know, pay off for them, because it's not cheap to fly, as we all know.
What about formatting? So there's a couple of things we talked about by text before this. Outside of Canada, in the rest of especially in the Middle East and Europe and Asia, it's common on they don't call it a resume there, it's a CV, to include a picture, a headshot on your resume, which is, I think, perfectly normal, acceptable, and expected outside of Canada. I think it's a little bit of a gray area here, and it can kind of go either way. What's your take if you see a resume that has a picture?
I'm honestly neither here nor there. In some cases, I think it's good. Depending on if it's corporate, because they're looking for, you know, people to sit up front and represent the company, I may put my photo on it. If it's for an airline, a Canadian airline, like let's say WestJet or Air Canada or Porter, like one of these, no, I'm not putting my picture on it. They're not bothered with your photo. So I would ask HR, or just phone them up and say, hey, does your hiring department, do they want photos on the resume? Because sometimes places will ask for your license too, because they want to see type ratings and recency. So just phone ahead and find out, or read the ad and see what the ad's asking for. Like recently I just put an ad out for some pilots, and I specifically said references need to be on the resumes. People did not read it because I got a lot of resumes without references. So make sure that you read the postings and make sure you have on the resume what's asked of you. It's for a reason, because if I get a resume and your time looks great, but you don't have the references there, and I only have 48 hours to hire someone, you're going to get put on the B pile, because you're making me have to phone you to find out references when I've got other people that have followed all the requirements and they have the same amount of time as you. So that's key. Read the requirements on the website, on the Pilot Career Center, wherever you're finding these job postings. Put everything on the resume that's required.
And that's actually, I just thought it'd be a neat litmus test that somewhere in the job ad, put something like on your resume, inform the chief pilot that you have information, Charlie, and just see how deeply people actually read stuff and have it in the cover letter. I don't know. Just like a just require. I like to have a little bit of fun. I don't know.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
I was thinking the other day, speaking of networking, I want to get back to resumes here, but we talked about, you know, Blake, who is in the mine. We talked about Doug, who is laid off Air Canada and is driving for FedEx. I was thinking about jobs that pilots could do while they're laid off, or even if they're not laid off, they're just looking for that first flying job. And I don't know what it is, but I thought the best job for a pilot in waiting, especially even a low timer, would be like being a skip the dishes delivery driver or a pizza driver, because everybody orders skip the dishes. Everybody orders a pizza at some point. And, but the key isn't just to do the job. It's to, if you're like me, I've got a drawer full of like aviation themed t-shirts, is to go be a food delivery person, but always wear some sort of like tasteful aviation theme, fun t-shirt while you're doing it. So casual, because at some point you're going to end up at somebody's door. Cause I don't know anybody who flies who doesn't like pizza or take or delivery, especially in this climate right now. And, and I don't know, if somebody showed up at my door wearing an aviation t-shirt, I'd have to ask them about it. Like you can't call yourself a pilot if you wouldn't ask somebody about the aviation t-shirt that they're wearing while they're delivering dinner. I don't know. I just thought of it as a bit of a outside of the box, subtle networking possibility. I don't even Uber, if there's Uber in your city, like doing that, but wear something aviation to get the conversation started, I guess, is the key thing.
Yeah. It's networking again. You're piquing people's curiosity. They want to ask questions. Skip the dishes, Uber Eats, Amazon delivery guy. There's a guy in town right now, Skip the Dishes. He's making $5,000 a month delivering food, 6 hours a day. He's making more money doing Skip the Dishes than he was at his job, because he will not go on the CERB. And I applaud that, because the CERB's only going to cost all of us a lot of money. And it's guys like that. If he was in aviation, would be the guy on top of my list. Because you know why? The guys that are driving for FedEx, the guys that are working in the mines, those are the guys that are grinding and doing whatever they need to do to stay busy. Mm-hmm. And those are the guys I respect, because it goes back to the days when we were pumping floats, humping bags, sleeping in the back of cars. Mm-hmm. Those are the guys that got the jobs and the gals that got the jobs. And mm-hmm. There's so many stories. We'll have to do another podcast about, you know, the days when, and it's funny because as I'm getting older, I swear I'd never talk about them, but now it's like, okay, now it's getting to that point where it's like, I got to tell this millennial younger generation, which have a phenomenal opportunity aside from this COVID, which I'm hoping is only going to be a small speed bump, to have an amazing career at a much younger age than when we started out.
It's okay. We can talk about when we started, as long as we both promise to never say I've forgotten more than you'll ever know. It's like, that's the most I've been around douchebag comment I think I've ever heard a bunch of people say.
That's pretty douchey.
So a couple like little formatting. There's some really creative, I think I sent you one of them, and I want to find his name, because I'm actually going to shout him out, because here's my thought. It was Nikos, and an awesome, probably Greek last name that I'm not going to try and butcher on here. But I mean, try to keep it to one page if you can. I mean, there's some that are like 3, 4, or 5 pages. And the funny thing is it seems like the less experience people have, the longer their resumes get, because they're trying to like fill space to make it look like make it more impressive. And I think it hurts them. But Nikos is not one of those guys. He got it all on one page. He crammed a lot on one page. He formatted it beautifully. It's all compartmentalized, and the main things are there, and it's easy to read, and it's a pleasure to look at. And I sent this to Owen, and I said, looking at this guy's resume, I can only imagine how much cargo he could get into an airplane. This guy's a Tetris king. So
he is.
Nice job on that. It's beautiful.
Do you know what I like about his resume?
What?
His name's clear at the top. He's got his email, his phone number, and even his LinkedIn, which is an amazing tool, folks. If you haven't played with it, get on it. His education, his languages, his skills, and then he's got a summary flight experience, certifications, and then experience, which none of it is flying, but it's very to the point and shows his professionalism. Yeah. And that's what you have to show. And I agree with you.
He's got 205 hours, but his resume looks like somebody who you, especially in a corporate setting, somebody you would want working with you, because if he can make a 205 hour resume look this good and just the important stuff, like imagine what he could do for your organization.
Yeah. Huge.
Huge.
Yeah.
You mentioned LinkedIn, and Dan Nieto actually messaged me when I put on Instagram if they had any questions for this. And Dan is, I grew up with him actually, and he's a now laid off Airbus 380 captain from Emirates. Yeah. Awesome guy. All of his experience is airlines, like, cause he's also a Peruvian citizen. His first job was like in an Airbus 320 at LAN Peru. But he mentioned or wanted us to bring up social media and, one, how to use it effectively, and two, how to not let it hurt you. And he brought in like LinkedIn as an example, and you mentioned it. In your experience, how can you make something like LinkedIn work for you, and how can you use those tools to your detriment?
LinkedIn has a thing there. If you put in a proper professional profile and you're looking for a job, there's settings in there that you can say that you're looking for a job, so that when other companies or people that are networking, they punch in a few keywords, chances are you're going to come up on their feed. Because every week I keep getting emails that my profile is being seen, and it's by not only a few people, it's, you know, 15, 20, 40, 50 people a week. And people are looking for qualified people with all experience levels, and LinkedIn is just another way for them to network. Because there's really no real proper Canadian aviation website where guys can put their resumes. That's why we started up flightcrew.ca. It allows for guys in Canada with 200 hours and 20 plus thousand hours and everything in between to put their time and experience on there. And Ryan and I are here to help you find jobs, because it's not what you know, it's who you know. And we seem to get a lot of phone calls from people across Canada looking for qualified guys, because A, they don't have time to hire, or B, they've hired people and they have not worked out. I won't use the word putts. They haven't worked out and they're just frustrated, or they own a plane as an example, and they had two people flying for them, and they parked the plane completely separate from where the owner was, and the owner thought it was going to help him out, and it actually was very costly for him. So that was mismanagement. So you would be surprised the amount of people out there in Canada that have planes that are looking for pilots, but they don't know where to look. So LinkedIn's a great place to put a professional photo. Do not use it like Facebook. Do not use it like Instagram. It's your professional resume globally. And you would be surprised if you tweak it a bit and you go on LinkedIn and you find people that have experience that you want to have and see how they have their pages set out. Don't cut and paste, but take ideas. It's no different than the formatting of resumes. Find out what other people are doing and see if you can find resumes and see if it's clean, see how it works out. We can tell exactly, you and I, before we finish this podcast, what are the key things to put on a resume. So it sort of will make it easier for employers to look at them.
For sure. And we, I just want to like give two examples on flightcrew.ca just in the past week. With Cardinal Aviation, is we get a lot of like really interesting inquiries. It's not always like, hey, I need somebody for a full-time salaried position, but we have interesting jobs come up. And in the last 2 weeks, we've done two delivery acceptance flights. One was a King Air 300 and the other one was a pair of Beech 1900s.
Which is awesome. So guess what? Some guys that are out
of
work.
I need somebody who's qualified and current on those airplanes to go up with the pilot who has been flying them on behalf of the buyer and make sure that all of the systems are working as they should. I'm type rated on both those airplanes. I'm not current on both of them. So, I did the King Air 300 personally, but the Beech 1900, man, it's been 13 years since I've sat in one of those. So I went to flightcrew.ca and I filtered out Beech 1900 people. So I looked for somebody that had been a Beech 1900 captain recently. And I called him up. I said, "Hey, you know, let's talk. You know, what's your number?" And we found something that was fair, and we worked together. We created flight check sheets. He went and did the flight to Beach 1900s with the pilots observing. I mean, yeah, sure, it's not, you know, in the seat flying, but it is a job. It is money. And then he put together a phenomenal report, and he did such a good job on the report. And I don't want to like put the horse before the cart here, cause we're still waiting to finalize some stuff, but he did such a great job on the report and was so thorough that the buyer, got the report and said, "Wow, is this guy available to ferry both airplanes to us once we complete the sale?" And so, yeah, they can be done single pilot, but I prefer that we do them two crew, which means I need somebody else now. So again, I went to flight crew and I pulled, and I pulled locally four other pilots that also had type ratings on the airplane. And I actually gave, you know, we're not here to play judge and jury, but you know what? I would rather, and this is again, connecting people and networking, whatever. I sent the first pilot three resumes and I said, "Here, you can pick who you're going to do the trip with. If we get the trip," like we're still in the quoting and talking about it phase. So it's not for sure. And, of those three resumes, one had 2 years of experience on type. The other one had a year of experience on type. And the other one had a week of experience on type before COVID. And you know what? He picked the one with a week of experience on type. Cause he said, "I want to help this guy out. I want to, awesome. You know, this is a trip he will remember. He's going to learn so much." And so it's not always about who's got the most time is, I guess, what I'm kind of getting at here. And the cool thing is the first pilot got to see the names of three other pilots and their qualifications. And now that's a name kind of like in the back of his mind. It's part of networking. So we're able to use, this tool, one, to, you know, with our work, to help connect you with, even if it's a contract job that's a couple days long or a couple months long, or maybe it's a full-time position, they're all there. So yeah, get your stuff on flight crew, cause it's useful. Email addresses.
Do you want me to do this one?
Yeah.
Guys and gals, if you have an email address like partytime661@gmail.com or, you know, givemefivebucks.com, something that's inappropriate that probably is not professional, you do not want to use that as a email address. Sorry, someone's doing fireworks in my backyard. I don't know what that's about. If you're going to put a professional email address on a resume for a professional job, make the email address professional or at least normal, not partycrasher613@gmail.com or Hotmail, whatever. So that we saw a lot of that. And the other thing I want to bring up is this. There are so many different cultures and ethnicities in this world that have amazing names, but some of them are very hard to pronounce. And when you put three or four names on a resume, your first and second middle name, and then your last name, you don't need to put all your names on the resume because it's a lot of names. When you get hired, then the employer is going to want to know your full name for customs and all that stuff. And your passport will have that, but just have something that people can know you as a first and last name. Because if you have all that on your resume, it takes away from your experience, which I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of. So just keep that in mind. Make the resume easy and clean, I think is what I'm trying to get at.
And you know what, on emails too, I mean, there's appropriate emails, but I mean, as pilots, we think about how could something go wrong, or like risk management. Part of that is also in picking your email address. Like if you have an email address that is, you know, even if it is your name, if you've got a name that is not a common, let's say, Western syntax and spelling, and there's a lot of like double consonants or, you know, letter, number, that, put it this way, look at your email address for a second. If you're putting it on a resume, and this goes for flying or anything, and take a second and think, what are the odds of somebody making a typo while they type this into their,
into their
email app? Like, what are the, they want to contact me for a job. They want to interview me. They're interested in me. And you know what? They're not that interested in you that they're going to wonder 3 days later why you didn't reply. They've already moved on to the next one. So make it really easy for them to put in, because the last thing you want is them making a typo of one letter on your really complicated spelling email address, and you never got the email and you missed out on an opportunity. And with that, if you are looking for a job, make sure you check your junk mail daily.
Yes, that's huge. A lot of email have security on them, and for whatever reason, I have actually missed quite a few things in my junk email.
Yeah, so there's a couple email pointers. Make sure your email address is appropriate, not partypimp69 at, you know.
No, don't use partypimp69.
No, that's not a good one. And make sure it's easy to spell so that you don't have a chance of a typo. Again, risk mitigation, same thing with flying, and check your junk mail. We got another question, and if I go look at the stats right now from the resumes that we have on file, one of the questions we asked was reason for placement. And the options were presently employed as a pilot looking for career advancement, furloughed and recallable, laid off, unemployed, left flying, looking to get back in, working abroad, seeking a return to Canada, looking for first flying job. So the two biggest slices of that pie are actually equal at 32.7% of laid off, unemployed, and furloughed, recallable.
Yeah.
So we got an email, and I know there's a lot of guys and girls thinking this right now. They work for a major airline. They're laid off, they're furloughed, which means that they're out of work, but they have a seniority number. So when things eventually pick up, they will eventually be recalled. The thing is with furloughs is most companies that would have furloughed are unionized companies, and you can usually defer a furlough for a certain amount of time. Yeah. So the question was, if I'm a furloughed airline pilot that has return rights, and you know, even if I can defer it, if I apply to a job, the fact that I work at a 705 carrier in the US, a 121 carrier, the fact that I've worked there and that I'm recallable, does that make me basically like out of consideration? Are you just going to toss my resume because I have something to go back to, or because I might get trained and then leave again? And the part B to that question is, what if that pilot actually tasted the airlines and kind of said, you know what, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I like the other stuff better, and they maybe don't have an intention of going back. How do they portray that? So I'll leave that with you, because I'm not the guy to answer that.
It's a tough one. We've never had, well, since I've been flying, I don't think we've had a furlough ever. The States has, but we've never had real furlough, and it's not easy. And I've had to deal with this lately. It's a tough one. I'm trying to put myself in someone's shoes, and I worked for one of the major airlines for quite some time and left. It's a tough subject. I'm going to be completely honest with you. You and I chatted about this a little bit before, just on text. When you're applying for a company, when you've been furloughed, people have to keep this in mind. If it's a company that has a corporate flight department, or they're managing aircraft for a company, there's training costs that are involved, and the training costs are extremely expensive. Like we're talking, whatever you think training costs are, add 30% to it, because on top of the training, there's hotels, per diems, insurance. It blows me away, to be honest, how much it costs to train a pilot on a plane nowadays for an initial. Even recurrents aren't cheap. So let's say in 2 years with an initial and a recurrent, a company spends $65,000 to $70,000 US just on the training, and then you're gone for 30 days total, call it 20 days for your initial and 10 days for recurrent. That includes airline travel. It adds up. So these companies have to take that into consideration. And it doesn't mean that someone who doesn't have airline or who's furloughed isn't going to leave in a year or two, but that's always a burning question on the minds of the owners of the plane, of the companies that's managing it for you, on the operations manager and the chief pilot, because having to retrain someone is costly as well. It's not just money-wise, it's time-wise. So that needs to be a big consideration. So it's not easy. I feel sorry for everyone, and I feel for everyone that's in that position, but it's not easy. But there are companies that are seasonal that I don't think look, I don't know, it's a tough one. I have a lot of friends, I'm sure you do as well, that are in the airlines that are furloughed, and they're kind of wondering what to do. I'm going to tell you what a buddy of mine's dad told me when I started aviation 25 years ago. He was an Air Canada captain flying the heavies. And I've taken this to heart. I laughed at him when he told it to me, but it's come true more and more times in my career. And it's come to light, especially with COVID. He said to me, he said, "Owen, treat your airline job as a hobby and always have a side hustle or a side gig that's your backup. So if something happens with aviation, you got a backup. Have something as a backup, because something like this happens." I've been doing this, like I said, 25 years, and either companies have gone belly up, they've run out of money, or they've been shut down three times in my career. And he said to me, he said, "Always make sure you have 6 months of salary sitting in your bank account." Now everyone laughs when I say that, but you have to be very frugal with your money the first 10 years of your aviation career and always have a little nest. That's why treating aviation as a hobby and having a side hustle as a backup, aka sort of a full-time gig, is key. And you'll see a lot of Air Canada guys, they're only working 10, 12 days a month flying. A lot of them have something on the side.
Yeah, I remember when I was flying at the Lear for the medevac operator, I was doing like kind of side construction odd jobs at people building fences and decks and stuff. And at that point, I needed that to supplement living, unfortunately. But, there's always been something else going on. And I agree with that. And it's so, ironic, because everyone wants, the airline job, And I guess I hate like the unfortunate truth. And sometimes we just got to speak the truth, is it kind of sounds like right now that could actually maybe be working against you.
Yeah, I agree. This is the only time in my career that I actually thought I regretted leaving the airlines, but it's turned out in my favor, which I don't like, but sort of for horrible circumstances. Mm-hmm. But it's not easy.
So I want to go through, there's a couple other stats I want to just go through, because we got stats on a few things. So are you willing to relocate? 86.4% said yes, 13.6 no. I mean, that's a personal thing, and I don't think anyone can really be judged on it. If I had to fill out a form right now, my answer would be no. It just, life circumstance.
Well, if you have family and kids, you can't just pick up and go. Like, if you're going to get offered a job in Asia, as an example, you're not going to just uplift your family and go right away. If you're going to be, proper, you're going to go for 6 months and go and check it out and make sure it's going to work for you and the family first. So yeah, moving's not always easy.
Here's a really interesting one. So we asked, are you commercially licensed to fly fixed wing or helicopter? This one is I'm working on that commercial heli conversion now, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it after, but looking at this stat makes me feel really good about doing that as a backup plan, because 97.3% are fixed wing only.
Yeah.
1.8% of our resume pool is both fixed wing and helicopter, and 0.9% that's one person, is helicopter only, which tells me that helicopter guys have kept their jobs.
Yeah.
And it's, the specialized nature of the work, and, us fixed wing guys always give the heli guys a hard time. But looking at this pie chart, which is 97.3% of our resumes are fixed wing, tells me that I think there's a couple of helicopter guys having the last laugh right now.
Yep. They've done well. There's definitely a shortage on the helicopter side.
Yeah. So what license do you hold? And this was almost evenly split. So it was 53% are ATPL in our pool, and 47% were commercial. Instrument rating, this is an interesting one. So 74% have an instrument rating that is current, 22 have an instrument rating that is not current, and that's percent, and 5% was no instrument rating. Type ratings. So do you hold a type? Yeah, we wanted to talk type ratings.
Yeah.
Because this was a real eye opener as soon as we started accepting resumes into flight crew, is there's two pages, and one says list any type ratings you hold, and the other one is and other aircraft you've flown. So Owen, do you want to just talk real quick about what a type rating is? How you will know that you have a type rating?
Yeah. A type rating is a rating that you have in your blue pilot license. It comes on your sticker and says you have a type rating. Like an SW4, a Metro, a BE200, anything that's over 12.5, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but anything over 12,500 pounds is a type rating. Anything that's under 12.5 is not a type rating. It's just you have the experience to fly that plane. I can't remember what they call it, but it's not a type rating.
PPC, like a PPC or whatever it would be.
Yeah. It's
a, yeah. There is an exception, so, though, that the TBM is like a, it's like a 7,000, no. Yeah, whatever. 7 or 9,000, I should know I fly the damn airplane. 7 or 9,000 pound airplane, and it is a type rating. There's exceptions.
It's because of the, it's because, well, there are a few exceptions, like the Honda Jet, as an example, is a type rating, mm-hmm. and it's under 12.5.
Yeah.
But I think it's because it has, it's a jet, and maybe because the TBM's got a turbine.
The Pilatus is not a type rating, but the TBM is, and it's because of the performance spread of, 75 knots all the way to 330 knots, that there's such a wide range of the operating envelope. But anyway, that's a whole nother topic. But so type rating is a type that is listed on your printed sticker or on your license in your blue book. So Airbus, Boeing, King Air 200, Beech 1900, Saab 3-4, all those are type ratings.
A Cessna 172, a Cessna 182, a Cessna 206, PA-31, those aren't type ratings. So don't put those down as type ratings, people. Just put them down as flight experience or other aircraft. So that is important. So when you're putting your time, here's an example of a great resume. It's got the name at the top with the person's address, email, and phone number. It's got an objective, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sentences long. Then under that, a certificate and ratings. So he's got his ATP, or she does, Group 1 Instrument Rating, Transport Canada Class 1 Medical Certificate, and then PPCs of what the vehicles are that they have. So like, for instance, Airbus, Embraer, Metro, 2 Metros. And then under that, flight experience to date. And these are the key ones that you want to have on your resume.
Total time. And they're all appropriately rounded. They're all rounded appropriately.
Yeah, I think you know the resume I'm looking at right now.
I'm looking
total
at
time,
as well.
PIC. Multi-PIC, and the multi-PIC has a total number, and then in brackets beside it has X amount of hours on jet, which is perfect. This resume will go to the top of my pile right now just with that, because this person knows exactly what I'm looking for. Then on the right side, it has multi-engine, multi-turbine, and jet time. That's it. That's all we want to see. Then under that is work experience, and folks, this is a one-page resume. Has got what he did, the name of the company, under that, the position he held, and on what aircraft, and that's it. From when and to, from the start date to the end date. And he's got 1, 2, 3 jobs, and those are pilot related, aviation related, and then he's got 1, 2 that are still aviation related, but not pilot positions. And then under that is education, and then he has references available upon request. In regards to that, if you see a posting, and I said this earlier, if you see a posting asking for references, the person wants to see references on your resume. So if that's your standard resume, you need to put references on page 2 and send them. If you're comfortable just putting references available upon request, then that's fine. If you're applying to a company that a friend of yours is working at and you respect that friend, you need to put their name on the resume. I can tell you time and time again how many guys have made it to the top of the pile just because of who they knew.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been huge.
I think, you know what, we gave Nico a shout out for the other resume. So I think, not that it's not a contest, because we're all in kind of in a shitty place right now, but Nico's, I think you had by far the best low time resume. And the one that Owen was just talking about, I know he listens to this and I'm sure he'll know that it was him, but Ben, I think yours was the cleanest kind of, I guess, quote unquote high time resume, if you will.
I
don't even know what's high time anymore, high, mid, whatever, experienced guy. That was really good. So I think we've covered a lot of really good stuff. I think the main takeaways are, keep it professional, keep it concise. Nobody cares about, what high school you went to. I don't think.
Nope. One page, you need to fit it on one page, and it needs to be clean, easy to read, and pop in your face. When I pick up the resume, I need to see where you live and how much time you have and your experience. You don't need to put your experience for the last 20 years on your resume.
Here's one more, speaking of experience, there's a lot of them where they'll list where they worked and it'll be, XYZ company flying a Beech 1900, and it'll be, I was a first officer, which is good. I mean, you also do want to probably list the position you held.
But
under description, it'll say, was responsible to the captain, checked weather, filed flight plans, you know, ensured safe operation of the airplane, navigational duties. You don't need, okay, it's a pilot job ad hiring a pilot. We don't really need to define what a pilot does. I think we already
know what you're going to do.
Yeah. So company name, when you were there, what your position was, what you flew, and the dates, I think, is all that matters. Like, we know what Medevac does. We know what, a commuter does, or corporate, you know. I don't need to outline that I cleaned the toilet on the airplane and also prepared catering, hopefully washing my hand in between.
Hang on, I need to have a sip of my beer right there.
Yeah, good call. Yeah, anyway. The other thing, frozen ATPL came up a couple times. So in Canada, I guess it's a term that is being used now if you are in some sort of integrated professional pilot program at a university or an accredited school. And in being part of that program, it allows you to write your CERON and your SAMRA at 250 hours, or basically 250 hours versus needing half of your ATPL requirements. And they're calling that the applicants are calling that a frozen ATPL because they have their ATPL exams written and they are not going to expire. So as soon as they meet the experience requirements, yes, they will get an ATPL. I'm going to be completely honest, how I read that when I see it on a resume, when I see 260 hours frozen ATPL, I see kind of entitled, arrogant, personally. Those are the first two words that come to my mind. You have a commercial license.
Just write on your license. You've got your commercial license and your ATPL exams are written, but under your license, it's, was it IATRA or whatever it's called?
Yeah. Well, and the IATRA is another exam. Definitely include if you've written your IATRA exam, because that is a required exam to be a co-pilot on a two crew aircraft.
Yep. It's a must.
And go write it. If you haven't written your IATRA, you are limiting yourself by not having it written.
Yep. Get it done right away. Do not procrastinate. That's a huge one.
And I think we're talking about the airline pilot thing going back. One thing I've also seen a lot of just out at the airport and talking to friends is there's a lot, this could actually be good for aviation in the long run, because there's a lot of laid off or furloughed airline pilots right now that are taking this time and going and renewing their instructor rating or going and getting their instructor rating. And so for the first time in a long time, we may actually have people teaching people how to fly that have industry experience.
Which would be fantastic. That's the one thing that baffles a lot of people that aren't in aviation, that I call it low time, no time. And don't take this as disrespect in any way, because it was one way that I wanted to go was be an instructor. But a lot of people don't understand in the world that are nervous flyers, as an example, how low time people are teaching no time people how to fly. They're like, well, why aren't guys from the military, these 50, 60-year-old guys who are retired, why aren't they flight instructing and doing all that stuff? So it's a very backwards in this. This is one of the only industries that does that, where you have someone who has very little experience teaching you how to fly. So
The next generation may actually be one of the best that we've seen, because they may actually have the opportunity to learn from some people that are going to be away from their airline job or whatever their job is for 2 or 3 years, and they can actually learn from somebody who's been there.
Yeah. Well, I think that's fantastic. I wish I had that when I started out.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Okay. Well, you know what? This may turn into the longest episode we've ever done, because we've been going for a bit and my beer is just about empty. I think we covered a lot of really good points, and I think hopefully we can help a few people out. If anybody, I mean, we shared a couple personal opinions and what I think really doesn't matter and what Owen thinks at the end of the day really doesn't matter.
Nope.
If you agree with anything that we mentioned here, let us know. And if you disagree and you think we're, full of crap, feel free to let us know. We're okay with that too. And we won't judge you, because
we're here to help everyone out, because aviation, as we all know, once you get it in your blood, it stays in your blood and it's fantastic. And it's not a good feeling to have friends and acquaintances out of work, because none of us would have ever have guessed or bet this sitting around a table having drinks one night after a flight that this would ever happen. So if there's anything Ryan and I can do for anyone, put your resume on flightcrew.ca and give us an opportunity to try and help you out. Guess what? You're not going to lose out on anything by putting your resume in. You're probably going to gain something, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah. And if you, I mean, I'll throw this out there. I mean, I don't have a lot of time, like spare time, I should say. But if you've listened to this and you're wondering, like, after listening to this, you should be able to look at your resume and kind of have a gut feel of like, hey, well, mine's actually really good, or mine could use some work, or I really don't know. So spruce it up. If you really know that yours, if you know that yours can use some work, give it some work. Don't just send it to me and be like, hey, could this use some work? But if you want, email it to info@cardinalaviation.ca and just put in the header, like, can you have a look at this? And if you do that, I'm going to warn you right now, I'll probably send it to Owen. I'll look at it. I'm not going to get back to you right away because it'll be something that I do, you know, if I got a few minutes, but I don't mind having a look. I'm not going to write you an essay. I'm not going to fix it for you. But I think Owen and I would be perfectly happy to kind of give you a quick two or three lines of this is really good, or we'll just be brutally honest and say too much of this, cut that out. And we're not going to go back and forth with you on it. We want to help you out. And I think we could definitely give you just a fresh set of eyes. Just, this is my first impression. This is the first five words that come to mind when I look at this piece of paper. I think, would you agree with that, Owen?
Yep. And in about 2-3 seconds, I can either say it's awesome or it needs a bit of work.
Yeah. And I think we, as a service to people that are listening to this, I think we would be happy to do that. So if you want to do that, you can email yours to info@cardinalaviation.ca. Might not get back to you quickly, but we'll be quick and we'll be honest. And I think that, again, we just want to help you out. And if we have to take a little bit of time out of our day to do that, I think it's something we're both more than happy to do. So
I would be happy to do that big time. That'd be awesome.
Awesome. Okay, Owen, well, thank you so much for doing part two. I think this was good. And yeah, we'll catch you soon. Enjoy flying the Honda jet around there. What's the first trip?
In a week and a half, we're flying around BC because we don't want to go to the States. So it'll be good. I'm looking forward to it.
Good time. Well, if I'm at work, I might be talking to you there. So
that'll be good. We'll do this again on another topic.
Yeah, sounds good. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, buddy. See ya. Bye.
All right, there you have it. An awesome hour with Owen Stacey. It is always a good time to catch up with Owen. I've known him for about 17 years. I think he was actually dating one of my first bosses at my first non-flying aviation job. And we've crossed paths a bunch of times in between, and we are now working together on flightcrew.ca, which is truly here to help you have the best chance of success in getting into the airplane. So if you are a pilot and you are looking for a job, make sure you upload your information and your resume to www.flightcrew.ca. If you are an aircraft owner, an operator, and you are looking for qualified pilots, and you want it filtered by specific criteria, contact us, info@cardinalaviation.ca. Visit us online at www.cardinalaviation.ca. Man, these URLs are getting repetitive. And follow us on Instagram @cardinalaviation. Basically, just throw Cardinal Aviation into the Google meter and we'll be there somewhere. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, fly safely, never stop learning, and take care of yourself.